Hello, and welcome to SLAS New Matter, the podcast where we interview life science luminaries. Today, I have the pleasure of interviewing Ms. Lynn Rasmussen, who is at Southern Research in Alabama. How are you, Lynn?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am great. First, we're going to put a challenge to you, which is, can you describe what you do for the world in 10 words or fewer?
Well, I can describe the company that I work for in 10 words or fewer.
Good enough.
And I would say that Southern Research is the most successful drug discovery company that you have never heard of.
I love that. Tell me why I've never heard of it.
Well, we don't manufacture and distribute the pharmaceuticals that we've discovered. We partner with people. We do the very early part of the drug discovery, identifying targets, running high throughput screens to find leads, and then doing some chemistry. Then we partner with other companies. So we currently have 7 FDA-approved drugs on the market.
Wow.
In the cancer area. So, yeah, we've done really well, and you've never heard of us.
Tell me a little bit more about your role in the process of discovering these drugs. I understand the high-throughput screening aspect, but do you also get involved in project selection or in the sort of areas that you guys focus in?
My expertise is in infectious diseases in that area and in the automation. So I came to Southern Research about 16 years ago when they were adding to the portfolio of things we worked on, expanding from the focus of cancer to infectious diseases. So at the time I got there, they were just starting to ramp up high throughput screening aspect of infectious disease work. So my background fit right in with that. And since then, we've done quite a bit of screening, both at BSL-2 and BSL-3 containment levels. And we were the roadmap infectious disease specialty center during that project.
That's really cool. So many questions. I'll start with one, which is, you can obviously screen lots of drugs against targets, or you can screen lots of targets against drugs. So in infectious disease research specifically, how do you set up your screens? What are you screening against what?
We are looking for lead compounds. So we're screening lots of compounds against an antiviral assay that we've developed. And as everyone is aware, COVID-19 is popular these days. So we have a high throughput screen set up to do drug discovery. It's a CPEWET assay, which is cytopathic effect. We add cells and virus and compound in our test well. And if the compound has no effect, the virus will kill the cells. Mm-hmm. And if the compound shows an antiviral activity, we will see some level of viability retained by the cells. So the endpoint is simple. It's viability. And it tells us whether our compound is having a positive effect against the coronavirus.
I know you've screened against lots of different viruses, including Nipah, TB, influenza, et cetera. I wonder, have you ever had one of these professional moments where you've walked in and like all the cells are alive in a culture and you're like, holy cow, that's the molecule?
Yeah. And actually, we, for this assay, which we worked up in February and did some screening in March, we have a collection at Southern Research of over 2,000 FDA-approved drugs and investigational new drugs. To validate our assay, we ran our FDA set, and we got some interesting stuff out of there. We went back and pulled some of the top hits out and ran them in dose response, and now we're in the process of running combinations to see if we can find combinations of drugs that work well together to give us an even better effect. So it's
really
always
cool.
Exciting when you don't kill the cells.
Hey, they live. Tell me about biosafety level 2, 3, 4. Not everybody who listens to this is going to be used to gloving up, costuming up, and going in under scuba situations. So tell me what it's like to work under those constraints.
BL2 is like your regular laboratory where you would work in a biosafety cabinet, laminar flow hood, to contain any aerosols. You wear gloves, you wear a lab coat, you wear safety glasses. You have lots of Lysol around so that you can keep surfaces contaminated that you're working with and near and on. And you decontaminate any cultures that are left over before you send them for autoclaving. When you go to biosafety level 3, that's where you take off your street clothes, put on your scrubs, go into a facility. When you walk into the door, the first thing you come to is the PPE rack. So the first thing you do is put your gloves on and you put your shoe covers on, and then you get a PAPR, which is a powered air purifying system. It's a little hood that goes over your head, pulls room air through a HEPA filter, and then blows HEPA filter air down over your through your hood, over your head and face to keep any aerosols that could be in the facility from entering your breathing space.
Your own personal fume hood. Holy cow.
Your own little personal clean air device sitting on top of your head to keep all the bad bugs out. And so that when you enter the facility, that's what you're wearing. When you actually start to work with any of the infectious agents in there, you also put on a disposable wraparound gown, you know, as another layer of PPE. That gets sprayed off and stays in the laboratory where you work. It doesn't go out into the hall or anywhere else in the facility.
And so I know you have collaborations with Biosafety Level 4 folks in another institution. Is that just Biosafety Level 3 on steroids, or is there something else specific to that?
No, Biosafety Level 4 is the one you always see in the movies. That's the most spectacular, where you go through the same putting scrubs on routine that you do for going into the BL3. Then instead of a PAPR, you actually go into a spacesuit with supplied air, and you are totally isolated from the environment in which you're working in the laboratory. And then when you leave, you go through a chemical disinfectant of your spacesuit. Then you take the spacesuit off, leave that, then you take a shower out like you do in a BL3 facility. It's everything you do in the BL3 plus you work in the spacesuit.
That's really cool. I'm having visions of E.T., to that movie from 1982. Curious, how did you get into doing this? I mean, not everybody goes through school and says, I can't wait to wear spacesuits to work every day to work with the most infectious viruses on the planet. So how'd you get there?
I guess it depends on how far back you want to go. I was encouraged to pursue science and technology by my father, who had a couple of brothers who were both scientists, and he always admired them and the work that they did. So I wanted to be like them.
Cool.
So I went into science and I got a degree in chemistry and a degree in biology because I couldn't make up my mind. And then I got a degree in molecular biology because that kind of combines biology and chemistry. So that was my educational background. And I got started in infectious diseases because I always hated being sick, because if I was sick, I wasn't having any fun. So it was pretty clear cut that whatever the infectious disease was, that was the bad guy and I was going to be the good guy. So I did some work in the infectious disease area. Then I got over into the DNA sequencing area, where I got introduced to automation, which was an eye-opening experience for somebody who'd had a 12-channel pipetter and thought that was a big step up.
A huge robot.
So I ran a DNA sequencing facility for a while, where we actually were sequencing a lot of viruses at the time. And then a position came up at Southern Research that involved position screening and the opportunity to get in on the early stages of their infectious disease program. So I went to Southern Research in 2004, and I've been there ever since.
That's really awesome. And what's the most exciting lab moment or professional development you've ever experienced, especially while you're in your fighting the bad guys mode in this current role?
Well, the most exciting moment was when I discovered laboratory automation, because my whole scientific career, there was always the experiment that you wanted to do, and then there were the limitations, and then there was a much smaller experiment, which is the one that you could do technically. And when I discovered these things like automated liquid handlers and robots, it's like the limitations just went away. And it was like, wow, now I can really do the experiment I want to do, instead of having to do 5 separate small experiments and then try to piece it all together. So that was the most exciting revelation moment in my scientific career, because now I use those tools every day to push forward the work that we're doing.
That's really great. And I've seen also, especially considering that we're recording this in August 2020, and of course, everyone has seen Director Tony Fauci in the news from the NIAID. I know you guys are the recipients of many NIAID grants, and you've been on the roadmap initiative. Tell me about what it's like to be not regulated by, but highly collaborative with government, with granting agencies, and with government scientists in this work.
Yeah, we do a lot of work with especially NIAID. We are currently have a U19 CDER grant with them, and it's a multi-organization collaboration effort where we work with investigators all over the United States. In that program, we actually did a lot of SARS work 5 years ago, SARS-1.
Good preparation for now. Sure.
Yes. So, I mean, we ran a high-throughput screen, ran 225,000 compounds on SARS-1 back in 2015 or so, and had a chemistry program going on that, still do. And so when SARS-2 came up, we took a lot of our SARS-1 work and ran those compounds against SARS-2 as well to see, you know, how many of them work on both of those coronaviruses. We've also brought up MERS, which works through a different receptor, as kind of our third coronavirus in our panel of screening. But yeah, working with the government folks is great. You know, they're always very supportive, and we have meetings. They always offer helpful insights.
That's great. And actually, that brings to mind the next question I'm going to ask, which is, what do you do when someone wants to be like you, when someone wants this role at the interface of public health and antivirals and automation? How do you encourage younger students, postdocs, even early career professionals who haven't had the revelation of lab automation yet? How do you encourage them along this path?
I guess to understand the tools that are available and how you can use them to advance the discoveries that you make, because a lot of people are still using 12-channel pipetters. They're still using endpoints like ELISAs that are not high throughput. So they're doing a lot of work they don't need to do to get the data. So being aware of what's out there that can streamline your work process to allow you to get more work done. So that's understanding a lot of the chemistry and biology of detection methods and targets, as well as the machinery of the plate readers, the robots, the liquid handlers, to make that all come together.
And I'm curious to push on that about why it is that people still use these sort of one-offs or manual techniques or non-optimized robotics to do their processes. Is it that we, SLAS as an org, need to go further back in the education system and educate people earlier, or is it a wider cultural acceptance of robotics?
What I have seen in my career is that people are comfortable doing it the way they've always done it. And when you say, well, you could do 10 times as much in the same amount of time and use half the reagent, but you have to learn how to operate a liquid handler, they look at the liquid handler as this big scary thing that, you know, they don't understand and they don't want to learn how to use. Mm-hmm. But if you set it up and show them what it can do, then it's like the light bulb comes on.
All of a sudden, it's the best thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, and you don't end up with carpal tunnel when you're my age.
That's fair. No more 12-channel pipetters for anyone. Got it. We have a kibosh on those.
I do have one 16-channel motor drive, but that's as far back as I'll go.
I won't tell anyone besides the couple hundred people listening to this. No worries. Tell me about your interactions with SLAS. What are you most excited about that we're doing all together? And what are you most excited about with SLAS in the future?
I actually belonged to ALA back before SLAS came into being by the merger of SBS and ALA. So once I had the epiphany that automation was going to make my life better, I started in 1999 and I went to every ALA meeting. And then after the merger, I went to every SLAS meeting, and I only missed one meeting a couple of years ago due to a family emergency. So I really enjoy SLAS. I really enjoy going to the vendor floor and looking at all the new equipment that's coming out and looking at it from maybe a little bit different perspective than the people who made it. Mm-hmm. I like to use equipment in ways that people haven't thought of to get done what I need to do.
Gotcha.
And it's great to walk down there and see all of the different offerings from, you know, big companies, small companies. Some stuff's really innovative. Something's really, you know, you see it and you go, oh man, I've been looking for that for 5 years. That would be great. So that's the fun I'm having at SLAS. I go to a lot of the talks as well.
We very much appreciate having you there, and we very much appreciate this long-standing service. My gosh, 21 years. I know you also run a scientific information group. I know you also volunteer in other capacities, so we thank you for that. Any closing thoughts you have that you want to tell our listening audience or something to inspire them about this fight against COVID?
Wear your mask, social distance, wash your hands, all the same things Tony Fauci's been telling you. Yeah, it's going to be an uphill fight. And it was interesting. Some of my non-science friends, when this all started, asked me, they said, did you ever think that this could happen? And I just looked at them and said, I knew this was going to happen. I just didn't know when.
Right. Right. Not a matter of when. It's a matter of, yeah, exactly. It will happen.
Right. So this month, I don't know if you've seen it yet, this month's National Geographic, the first half of it is all about pandemics and the history of pandemics. And they've got a really great timeline chart of all the pandemics and how many fatalities there were from each one over thousands of years. So that kind of puts this moment in perspective. We as humans have been fighting infectious diseases since before recorded history, and we're still fighting them, and we will continue to fight them. So I guess in a way it's job security, because there's always going to be another one on the horizon.
Well, we do appreciate you devoting time to fighting the bad bug, so thank you very much on that end.
You're welcome.
So without further ado, thank you very much for the time then, Lynn. This is Lynn Rasmussen, Southern Research, dedicated antiviral and bad bug fighter.
We do our best every day.
Thank you.